second hour of a Friday afternoon, Patriots Friday afternoon here on WEEI Afternoons. That was Patriots head coach Gerard Mayo talking about his wide receiver room, the group that has been much maligned, much criticized, couldn't catch the football for much of last Sunday afternoon's game. But in the end, Kayshon Boutte made a couple plays that helped them win the game. But if you believe Gerard Mayo, and he is supposedly very transparent, we
has he walked it back yet, Andy?
Oh, Fitzgerald, that's a cheap shot.
No, it's, well, sort of.
No,
I'm just having fun with the reputation. I'm having fun with the reputation that he has earned by walking it half of what he says back.
It is kind of what he does, but hopefully he'll turn a corner. Like he says, maybe his wide receivers have turned a corner in terms of catching the football. It would be a great thing if it were true that on the practice field this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there were not a lot of balls hitting the ground. Mm-hmm. And then it would be great if that made its way to Sunday afternoon in Tennessee. It would be even better if it's Drake May throwing the football. But we saw, and one of the big talking points, I think, in the victory was the disappointment that Kayshon Boutte had, even in himself, that he dropped so many balls before he made some plays. We know that Tyquan Thornton had a huge drop early on one of the more athletic, elite throws you'll see from Drake May.
That is a shame. That one, Ante, that supplanted the preseason 50-yard dime that he just flipped to Javon Baker he dropped down the middle.
This was a much harder throw, much harder, because it was covered. And I almost wanted to edit it and just use it anyway and pretend it happened. Like, cut it away right before you see the ball bounce off Thornton's chest. So people just, like, you know, do one of those fancy edits, add some music or something. And they're like, wow, what a throw. No one needs to know that he didn't actually catch the ball. The quarterback did his part of the job. Do you believe this wide receiver core could be ready to turn a corner? And I think this is an interesting week to do it, not just because it's a winnable football game, not just because Drake May could be returning to the field, hopefully we find out sooner rather than later, but also the apple of the Patriots' offseason eye at the wide receiver position will be in the stadium, I guess. Maybe not on the field because he didn't practice today, but Calvin Ridley. Mm-hmm. There's going to be those comparisons forever. What's Calvin Ridley doing? Should you have signed him? Was that a unanswered prayer, as Garth Brooks would say, that you didn't blow $90 million on him?
He looked pretty good last week, though.
Yeah, last week. He's had a bad year. He's had like 1.5 good games, basically. The bulk of his targets and catches came last week after they unloaded D-Hop working with Mason Rudolph. So it's interesting that he may not be able to play, but he was a guy that maybe was starting to pick up steam. I would have honestly liked to have just seen Christian Gonzalez match up with Calvin Ridley on Sunday, shut him down, and then have one of your guys go off for like 7 and 110 and a touchdown.
Now it's going to be Christian Gonzalez against Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
Yeah, I mean, for him, it's like, what a letdown. It feels like every week he's been going against an elite receiver.
But don't let it be a letdown game then. This is, okay, any which way you and I want to analyze this, we can posture it as a different kind of test for the team. You could have, if it's Drake May, it's Drake May, great. And he's going up against a team that has an elite secondary when healthy, but now if you've got Amani Hooker potentially out with the groin issue, if you have Snead not showing up at practice and him potentially out once again as well, now this elite secondary becomes kind of mid at best. So it could be a good bounce back or get right game for the Patriots passing attack and the wide receivers that had a viral case of the dropsies last week. Now, if you're saying that it almost might be too easy in a lot of ways, like who's Gonzo going to cover? Westbrook, Ikhine? They don't have anyone else to worry
about.
Should
I not be that cocky?
I wouldn't. No, because this team is not good enough.
For a two-win team?
This team is not good enough. No two-win team is good enough for us to be that cocky or arrogant about. No. Like this, it could turn into, it could go from a, hey, let's see who wins the garbage fight between the 1-6 team and the 2-6 team to, hey, the Patriots have no business being 3.5-point dogs in this game. Don't fall into the trap. Get out there and get the job done and prove that you're a team on the rise as opposed to a team on the bottom.
And I would say that exact speech to each and every one of the wide receivers, that you are a player on the rise, that you get out there and actually contribute to victory. Hey, and don't just do it for one catch here, one catch there. Can somebody find some consistency? I don't really care who it is. I don't care if it's Pop Douglas. I don't care if it's Kendrick Bourne, the veteran who was very down on himself for a pretty lowly performance last week, getting in on the drop parade. And I did find it interesting. Alex Van Pelt was just like, you guys have been receivers your whole lives. Like, this is what you do. This shouldn't be an issue. And I know the yips are a thing. The same can be said for a second baseman, Chuck Knobloch, or Rick Ankiel when he couldn't throw anymore.
Yeah, but that's
to the
like
plate.
One guy. What's the whole room doing with the yips?
Yeah, something in the water? What are they doing in the water down there?
That's not how it
works.
That's not how it works.
Bad candy? Maybe they got some bad sushi, bad shakes in the Patriots shake room? I don't know. I don't have an explanation for it. Now, they're all mid-level, but you're right. For all mid-level players to underperform is unfortunate. But the reality is they did underperform. If you believe their head coach, they're ready to bounce back, and I hope they bounce back with Drake May. 617-779-7937. Let's go back to the phone lines for everybody's favorite maybe Hall of Fame caller, a guy we found out yesterday through the text line and through other callers, is really not as old as he sounds, A, and a really nice man, B. Steve from Fall River is on with WEI Afternoons.
I don't know where you guys were smoking yesterday. I don't sound great. I don't have magical pipes, but I do not sound like a 78-year-old man. That is a fact.
Agreed.
And you have to be on crack if you think I do.
Wow, that's
you theorize that I was 78 yesterday. I'm not even collecting Social Security yet.
Well, you sound old. I don't know what you want me to tell you.
Well, I know. I was 22 years old, and they were on the phone talking to people, and they thought I was 40 years old. So I've always sounded old.
Okay.
So plus
because
20.
Because I'm mature beyond my years. I have all this wisdom.
Oh, yeah.
Now I want to tell you something. I do want to talk about Drake May, but quickly, okay. Fritzy, put this Parcells to the Parcells transition away, because Pete Carroll inherited a team that was the second youngest in the league, only to the Indianapolis Colts, coming off a Super Bowl win. That was the problem there. They needed the type of coach that Bill Parcells was. They needed the parent. Drew Bledsoe's out at a mosh pit. Everybody's having their fun. Pete Carroll's late to meetings. I mean, just completely the wrong type of coach. Is that really what the problem is with the Bruins? You just ticking everybody off. Mosh pit, this. No, they're not a young team. They didn't want the coach that has a short shelf life, we understand, is the Hardo. The Mike Keenans of the world, the Claude Julien's, the last guy. Those are the guys that have the short shelf life, not the players' coach. So it's not exactly – I don't think it's that. I wouldn't fire him in the beginning of the year. It's too early. It's early, early, early. Just look at his coach of the year thing. It was absurd. When they were running ahead, it only matters how you finish the season and what you're doing headed into the playoffs. So leave it the way it is.
All right, before we let you go, Steve, real quick on Drake May, what do you got?
You cannot play him because you cannot have another tour. What we know about the protocol is they don't measure the grade of concussions, probably because they don't want us to know, but we clearly know the whole world. The neurological world does it 0 to 4. You and I, everyone saw it. The hit, put the hits at 0 to 4. The hit was a grazing. He got a 0 hit. If his 4 is a big hit. And guess what? He's not out of the protocol yet. What are you going to do, win a game? What's this game you want to win versus having this guy remotely have a chance to get another concussion, which
That's
everyone will
what
tell
I was
you
thinking.
Will leave him more susceptible down the line to small concussions when they happen close in succession.
Sure. All right. Thanks for the call, Steve.
I did not think I would be walking the same side of the street as Steve from Fall River.
Well, whenever I'm confused, I just check my underwear.
We want Matlock.
Would you like to reevaluate your position?
I am more comfortable in my take than ever. The text line is behind me. More of the callers than not are behind me. Err on the side of caution, Andy. This
so
we are in it for
the
long
year.
Game.
Don't play him the rest of the year. That's the best way to make sure he doesn't get hurt.
Oh, listen to you. Oh, this is so football.
Where's the line?
So football.
Where's the line? Where's the line exactly?
It's a recent injury. Do you not think? I can't guarantee that his gray matter is going to heal entirely. But
I don't know that his gray matter is broken.
It probably is more susceptible to injury or re-injuring coming fresh off of it.
Who told you that? Your neurological friend?
Spell it.
No chance. No chance.
Yes, smart ass.
And that's where I just fall back on you have experts for a reason. in all walk. It's kind of my opposite argument of the Matt Patricia hire. When I was so angry that they hired Matt Patricia to run the offense, I'm like, there's experts for a reason. People work their whole lives to become experts and have all that knowledge.
Hey, right? hey, my buddy fixes cars. He probably can fix the toilet.
Right. No.
He knows how things work.
Does he have a buddy who's a plumber?
That's not how it works. Look, this all may be a moot point as well, because he's still limited on Friday. Perhaps,
but that doesn't matter. They're going. Like,
they
the
may
process.
Not clear. But yes, exactly.
No. So, but that's it's not a.
It could have already been cleared.
Thing.
Yeah.
There are no. But you got to go day by day. Some of is it.
I thought it was step by step.
But each step is day by day. I feel like we're doing TV.
I was
going
to say this is now just like Friday. Is this like TGI Friday on ABC?
But no. Some of them are
World.
You have to work out and then recover the next day. That's part of the evaluation. How did you respond to your elevated heart rate and the sweat and the different thing? Like, that's part of the process. So you can't, it's not like, oh, it's a really mild concussion. He should be able to go through it all on Monday. No. There's hurdles that take multiple steps over multiple days to go through the process. So I still continue to feel and get nothing but positive vibes out of Foxborough and out of Gillette into terms of how this is trending. But good news is you don't just have to listen to me or Tom Curran or many of the other people that feel like it's trending positively. We're going to have an expert in the area, a big-brained guy. I don't think he's a neurologist, but he's big brain. Mike Giardi, one of the favorite friends of this program, as well as the Six Rings podcast, will be joining us just after an award-winning Stizzard of Oz trending right now. That was Patriots offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt on Thursday. Very hopeful that things were trending in a positive direction for Drake May, Patriots rookie quarterback, who is still, as of Gerard Mayo talking to the media today, in the NFL concussion protocol. But there is also still a possibility that he could clear protocol and be available on Sunday against the Titans in Tennessee. And to talk about that very thing, joining us here on WEEI's afternoon show is a friend of the program and a friend of the Six Rings podcast, joining me at Jumbo Heart alongside Nick Fitzy Stevens. It's Mike Giardi. Michael Giardi, I have to ask you right away, because we've been debating it for multiple days. If Drake May is indeed cleared from the concussion protocol, would you play him on Sunday?
First of all, I'd like to say that I think I'm the best friend of the program.
I agree.
Let's start there. Not just a friend, but best friend. Yes, I play him. Absolutely. 100%. Fitzy's smoking something funny over there. Like, if he's cleared medically, and like I reported earlier in the week, he showed no ill effects, was feeling no ill effects from the hit on Sunday, Monday or Tuesday, then, like, what are you doing? Yeah, how are you going to tell the kid that he can't play when he checks out fine? And how are you going to tell the team, who has clearly been energized by him, clearly has a belief in him, despite him being here for, you know, just a handful of months and three starts, only of two which he completed, how do you tell them, hey, you know what, he's clear, but we're not going to play him? Like, it's not a sprained ankle. Like, I understand there's things that go into it, and you want to be cautious, but if they're following the protocol and the kid says he feels good and he's being honest with you, then you got to play him.
Yeah, but sometimes, Mike, you know this just from watching football, parenting, et cetera, sometimes you have to get in the way of somebody for their own best interests. And when it comes to something, you know, not to be that guy, but comparing a potential sprained ankle to a concussion, whatever grade or to whatever severity he sustained it, if he was even truly concussed, you could still even be in the protocol and not necessarily be that dinged up. You know, the way to me, if I were in this situation, I would say the reason why we're sitting him is because you're going to ride the positive momentum that you got from Brissett in the fourth quarter last week, and that this is a long-haul decision. Like, you're playing to win this game on Sunday because they're going one game at a time as they try to actually develop winning ways, learn to win, and set a culture and tone in Mayo's tenure. But at the same time, you know, you have to look at the totality of Drake May. This is a long game you're in.
Feels like you're turning into a bit of a mamby-pamby.
Wow. Hey, Troy Aikman, you want to tell me to take the dress off while we're at it?
I don't need to risk getting canceled. Troy's made enough money in his lifetime that if he got canceled, he'd be just fine. Me, on the other hand, I have two kids in college right now. I'm not messing with that. I understand what you're saying.
Right.
But you're looking at Elliot Wolf is being judged on this roster. Gerard Mayo is being judged by the team that he's putting out there and how competitive, or quite frankly, for five of the six previous weeks, or whatever it was, four of the six previous weeks, they weren't competitive at all. Like, Drake May gives them that juice. And I know, yes, they lost by 20 to the Texans when he started the first game. And I know they lost by double digits again in Jacksonville. But there's something about him, and you could feel it in the stadium when he went out and Jacoby went in. You could feel it in the crowd. You could feel it in the team, though. And to their credit, they were able to sort of right the ship in the second half. But you're playing a risky game. You've seen Jacoby, and you saw what it looked like with Jacoby. And do you want to take the goodwill that you felt from beating the Jets and turn around and go lose to a team that, aside from Carolina, has been by far and away the worst? You were playing bad. You were in the running for a little while, the Patriots. But Tennessee is a complete dumpster fire right now. I was on Tennessee radio earlier today, and they're like wondering, is this a one and done for Brian Callahan?
Oh. Yeah, he's coming off a 6-win season, no less, too, Mike. And now they're 1-6, and I don't see their upward trajectory at all. And we thought the Patriots were banged up. Have you seen their injury report? Holy smokes.
Yeah, it was not great for them at all. And, like, I was thinking to myself, well, like, look, if Sweat plays, Sweat alongside Simmons on the D-line, like, it's going to have a hard time running the football again. So then you're turning them into a one-dimensional team, and if Brissett's the one dimension that you're bringing a quarterback, like, there's a path there. I mean, look, there's a path anyways, because it's not like you're light years ahead of them in terms of your roster and your talent base, but that would change things if Sweat doesn't play. And there's obviously the Ridley thing. I mean, it sounds like Levis is going to get the start, which they were actually – you know, Mason Rudolph has been terrible, actually maybe worse than Levis was, and there was cries for Levis to be benched. So, yeah, they're a mess. They're a wayward ship right now.
A group that was a mess as of a week ago, a hell, as of Sunday, was the Patriots wide receiver group. But we hear Gerard Mayo today talking about a good week on the practice field, not a lot of balls hitting the turf. I don't want to ask you if you believe him, but do you think that group is capable of a relatively noticeable and swift turnaround? Could they get out there on Sunday with Drake May and suddenly you got two or three guys that are hauling in four or five passes and there's some consistency, fluidity? Do you think we could be on the precipice of a turnaround for that wide receiver room?
The way you're defining turnaround, yes. Yes, because there were four or five balls that should have been caught, like, no question. Like, if you want to say one or two of them, like, hey, if Bourne had made that back shoulder catch, that would have been he should have caught it, hit him in his hands, but like, that would have been a tough catch. But in general, like, those are some easy throws to mess up. Even Booty, the slant that he dropped that was behind him, you're like, oh, well, that's a bad throw. No, well, Booty was supposed to sit in the zone, and the throw would have hit him right in the numbers.
Right.
So they've got to clean up their act. We get into this thing now. It's like, is this big play Booty? And like, okay, you know, a guy makes a play here and he makes a play there, but then there's 50 other plays in the game that he's running the wrong route or he's not making. And we know Polk, when we last saw him, he was a mess and has been for a better part of the year. So do I think Jalen Polk's that kind of player? No, I think he's a better player than that, but he's got to show it. They've all got to show it at this point.
Mike, earlier this week, one of our fellow beat writers here, Taylor Kyles over at CLNS, put out a tweet of the players that have exceeded his expectations on the season, and it sort of got me thinking that there are a lot of guys that we had never really heard of before on this team now, the ragtag tatters of Patriots football that they put together. They're really kind of a rogue squad at this point. Who would you say, I'm just kind of curious, like offensively and defensively, who's playing above pay grade or above expectations now that's kind of helping them, that helped them win last week, and are some of the bright spots as we look to the midpoint and then subsequently the second half of the season for you?
So I wouldn't say that Anfernee Jennings is exceeding my expectations, because I thought he was really good last year, and I think he's done the same thing this year. Like, for all their problems in run defense over the previous 5 weeks, and actually even into the Jets game, don't forget the Jets rushed for over 100 yards, he's been their best front seven guy. Week in and week out, he does his job. He does it really well. He's obviously going to get more run as a pass rusher, it seems, and he did this past weekend because they traded Uche. But he's been someone to me that, like, that contract is – I mean, I understand it's an edge setter and run stopper. You don't get paid a ton of money. But, like, he's just a damn good football player. He's really – accountable for what he does, and he pretty much shows that on tape every single play. So he's someone that I would just say, like, he's just having a really nice year, and he's not going to get the crazy counting stats, so no one's going to really talk about him. But he's a good football player for him. He should be going forward. Offensively, I've liked Vedarian Lowe. Now, he hasn't been out there a ton because he keeps getting hurt.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I heard – I didn't like the answer from Gerard Mayo today when he was asked, could he be the long-term answer at left tackle? No. How about no? And he said yes.
Well, you need an answer, Andy.
Yeah, and go find a real answer. He might be named Will Campbell or some stud. Oh, no disrespect to Lowe, but it's like because he hasn't sucked, everybody has fallen in love with him. Because everybody, all the other options sucked or quit or left the team. Like him just being competitive somehow has landed him this opportunity. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but that answer really kind of concerned
you did.
Me today. Yeah, I did.
We've gone from suck to Lowe.
Yeah, I managed so much lower.
Look, I'm not telling you that he's been great. I'm just saying that he stabilized the position. And it's funny because remember when he sort of became the guy during August, and then when he got hurt late in August, and you're like, wait, does this team really miss Vedarian Lowe? And the answer was, yeah, the team really misses Vedarian Lowe. Now, again, that speaks to the overall tackle play that they've gotten throughout the course of the summer and into the fall here. But I think he's done a reasonable job at that position. I think he's at least shown to you that even if they were to do what you said, Andy, and go get a left tackle in the first round, if they're picking in the top 5 or 10, and that's what they do, and I would be perfectly fine with that because they've had a hard time answering that position other than the one rogue year they got from Trent Brown over the last however many years since Nate Solder was any good. You know, like that's been a big problem for them. But at least Lowe has showed you that moving forward, he is someone that, if this continues, he continues on this track, that he is someone that can be a serviceable, useful player for you, whether it be a starting right tackle, whether it be a swing tackle. We know you need those guys. I mean, pretty much never does any team make it through a full season without their injury, you know, without their offensive line getting banged up. So to have that kind of piece, again, it's more of a depth piece than it is a starring role, but I think he's done what he's needed to do when he's been out there.
Like a Cam Fleming type.
Yeah. I actually think he's a little bit, well, I mean, Cam played for a long time, so I shouldn't.
Yeah.
I think he's got a little bit more of a higher ceiling. But again, we're not talking about, I'm not agreeing with Gerard, I don't think.
Okay,
I would
good.
Say, yeah, he's my left tackle.
So we got a big Tuesday coming up after you vote for Trump, Mike. What will you be writing about how the Patriots handled the trade deadline?
I'll take baited questions for $400, Alex.
I still think another piece is
good. He didn't deny it.
Another piece is going to move. I'm not even touching any politics. It is
it's great. It'll load the phones up for the rest of the day. I can't wait to read the text line. Yeah, please.
The G in MAGA stands for Giardi.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Actually, the M stands for Mike.
What are you doing?
He's going to be people on his front lawn tonight, for God. I thought they would show up for his terrible candy take, not his political stance.
You see, that again shows a lack
of
talent.
Hey, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah. Time. Hold on.
Focus on the trade deadline.
I think another piece is moving. I think one of the guys in the wide receiver room, most likely KJ Osborne, is gone. I was chuckling because Doug Kide, who does a fantastic job at the Herald, the Beat reporter, Doug he went to talk to Osborne maybe yesterday or 2 days ago, and the headline was like, you know, something like KJ Osborne reacts to his name being in trade talks. And I'm like, he reacts to the fact that he's in trade talks because he told him he wanted to be traded. Right. And then he told us he wanted to be traded.
Right.
I did laugh about that. But yeah, like there's no point. Obviously, they're getting Javon Baker. I think you're finally going to get your wish. Fitzy and Baker's going to be active and actually play some offensive snaps on Sunday. And I think, you know, you start to look at the totality of that room and you say, you know, KJ's the opportunity we've given him, he hasn't done anything with it. And now that he doesn't want to be here and kind of went social with that, like, okay, fine. See you later. Well, you know, you're not getting anything for him. We're talking like a, you know, probably a 7th round pick, but you know, clear space for the kids to get more snaps.
Could they bring anybody in? That I know Josina Anderson had the report. I was trying to sell the point where I think that because of their cap space and because of their kind of blank canvas of a roster, they really can listen to anything, and they should be acquiring, I don't even care if it's a swing tackle, a fifth corner, a future free safety, whatever. Do you think there's any chance we have to learn a couple new names as of early next week?
Yeah, I haven't hated the idea. I mean, their cap space is ridiculous. They're, you know, we know how free agency works. So even if they do spend a ton of money in free agency, you're not guaranteed that that's going to be this unbelievable haul and like you've changed the structure of your team. So yep. If you're looking at guys, and you and I were texting yesterday, there are a couple names out there, guys that have been benched or are struggling that are, you know, high picks, former high first round picks. Emmanuel Forbes, the corner in Washington, who went ahead of Gonzalez, right? Like he's been benched. He's definitely not a part of their future plans. Now he weighs 170 pounds. I don't love that.
He weighs less than you.
With two phone books in his pocket soaking wet.
Yeah.
He's like a 160s kind of guy. But would he have any value as like a potential free safety? Maybe that's a dumb question. He's got a little length to him.
Yeah, I don't think he can hold up physically. I think remember talking to McCourty about that and the idea that, you know, there's a tight end running full bore down the seam and you're coming across and he's 250 and, you know, Devin was a solidly built, whatever, 195, 200 pounds. Right. But like Devin's shoulders are cooked because of those collisions over and over again. I think at 165, 170, you're probably asking too much, but like he's someone who had great ball skills in college. He's quick. He's long. Like that might not like a bad dart throw to take. Kenyon Green, who played terribly last night again for Houston, was a first round pick at guard. Like, I know you kind of probably feel like you have a lot of guards, but like a first round talent who has had some success in the league, I don't know if that's a fifth round pick or a sixth round pick, I might be willing to throw that dart. You know, like those are the sorts of players I think you're talking about. And the flip side, you know, the one other name I do want to mention, so talking about possible guys moving, is I do think there's some actual truth to the John Jones stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that name just got thrown out there for the hell of it because we looked at it and said, oh, he's 30 and he's in the last year of his contract. And I think there are teams that are generally interested in him.
Yep.
And genuinely interested in him. And that's a tough one for me because
what cost? What would the return to be?
I mean, I guess I would move him for no less than a fourth.
Same.
But even then, I'm still a little, and I'm not saying that like at this point of his career, that wouldn't be a smart business move. But in terms of what he brings to the locker room, and even this past weekend where he's dealing with the shoulder, but Duggar can't go, and you find that out officially 90 minutes before the game or 2 hours whenever he had his workout and they decided he couldn't go. And then John Jones is playing some safety.
Yep.
And they like to cross-train their guys, but there are very few guys that can go do that as fluidly as he can and make the right plays when he's doing it. And so between that versatility and then the leadership, you know, you saw him as the guy who broke the team down after the win, you know, with Juwan Bentley being out. Yep. Like, I feel like that locker room is a little rudderless. There's a lot of young guys, and having someone like him, who's one of the last remaining ties to great success here, there's some value in just keeping him and just saying, you know what, yeah, maybe a fifth rounder would still be good value for him, but we can't do that. We shouldn't do that. We need him to keep teaching the young guys how to be pros because that's been a problem for them.
It's for all those reasons and more, the leadership, the quality of character, the positional versatility, the fact that he plays at a reasonably high level on the inside and the out, as well as safety, and what he can teach these guys, Mike, that makes me think, as badly as they may want that fourth from, let's say, I don't know, San Francisco, if they were to call, because they've got secondary issues like so many other teams do, I just can't see moving on from him at this point, even if you would, you know, net another pick. You know, you've already got an extra 3 and a 6. There'll be compensatory picks. The Patriots will be loaded up adequately next year. Why wouldn't you want to keep a guy like him around? You've got $140 million. You could afford another 2 or 3 year deal for Jonathan Jones as well. So I'm with you. And I would love to see them bring somebody in as well this week. Defensive tackle, another linebacker, like you said, a safety. Just this is a process. Well, this is an exploratory process.
The DT thing is interesting too, because I think Godchild's that's real too. I think there are teams that have called about Godchild. The question there is, again, like maybe one of the leanest positions on your football team, cycling in a lot of unknowns, you know, Eric Johnson,
Jacqueline Roy is going to be your best defensive tackle.
So but then if you're telling me, okay, we're going to be able to get good value for Godchild. You know, San Francisco, there's another team that could – they lost Javon Hargrave, haven't been great against the run. He'd be someone that would do pretty nice things for them as they're still in a win-now mode. But then that's when you have to do the ancillary move. That's when you have to bring someone in who has a longer resume and is a better player stature-wise than what you have on your roster. Because if you're going to move him and then go with that, then what are you telling the rest of your team? But if you move him and you bring in a solid defensive tackle who's been in the league for 5 or 6 years and is a good player, then, okay, guys, you know, like, this made sense for us to get a fourth rounder for Devon. But at the same time, you know, we brought in a player that can still help us for the now when, as Mayo said, they want to be a team that is very hard to play over the second half of the season.
Okay, I got to ask you before we let you go. You had a controversial take last night about candy. I was trying to look it up. I didn't even know what one of the candies was. One of them was some soda pop crap thing, and the other was butter-flavored jelly beans.
No, butter those... popcorn jelly beans.
Okay, well, buttered popcorn jelly beans. Jelly Gross. Belly makes them. They are absolutely fantastic. They taste exactly like buttered popcorn.
That's amazing.
But they got that little sugar in them. Delightful. And then I can't believe you never had gummy colas before. People think like it's a wax thing. It's a gummy bear.
Yeah.
It's a gummy bear that's in the shape of a cola bottle, but it tastes like cola.
I don't like gummy.
So you can have a popcorn and soda like you're at the movies, but the texture is different, Andy. That's the whole idea. It's the Haribo gummy cola. Yeah.
And those are really your favorite candies.
Bango.
You'd rather have that than like a Milky Way or a Reese's
Milky Way is so mid.
Peanut butter cup. Milky Ways are phenomenal.
I said that they're elite candies. I didn't say that I would rather prefer them. See, this is where reading comprehension is important. Oh, and I know we're asking a lot of you and others on that social media app to understand the words that I wrote. But I didn't say that I wouldn't rather have a peanut butter cup. I'm just saying those are two elite candies nobody talks about.
They're underrated, Andy. Basically,
those are Javon Baker and Jalen Polk.
Now, he's saying they're the Anthony Jennings and the Del Pettis of candies.
Mm. Ooh, Del Pettis, by the way, having a nice little moment here.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, I agree with Judy Batista. She told you were wrong. I tell you were wrong. No, you can align yourself.
She flat out said, what's wrong with you?
And yeah. I said nothing. I said nothing and everything.
Tremendous All reply, Mike.
Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. We bring him on for his Patriots takes. We also talk candy. And real quick, I need a yes or no answer before I let you go. Should the Bruins fire Jim Montgomery?
I think the message is lost at this point. And I don't love the roster, so I think he's been saddled with some aging players or a guy like Zadorov, who's dreadful. But, it's probably time. I think they probably have no other choice but to make the coaching change, because you can't fire the 20 players in the room.
He's Mike Giardi, best-smelling man in the business, best interview on the phone in the business, good friend of the program. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, good luck to Jackson tonight.
Thank you.
See you, Mike.
Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal, here on the WEEI Afternoon Program, defending his candy takes and also saying a couple interesting things I thought about the trade deadline. We will get to those little nuggets from Mike Giardi in just a moment, back after this. That is Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal, just joined us previous to the commercials and talked about the NFL trade deadline. Jonathan Jones, is he a guy that you can maybe not afford to move on from? And then he brought up Devon Godshaw and that the rumblings about the defensive tackle maybe being involved with trade rumors might be real. What is real is WEEI Afternoon Show. I am Andy Jumbo Hart. He is Nick Fitzy Stevens filling in for Christian Arcand. And Fitzy, it's interesting because we've been talking a lot about Drake May and playing him. And now we're talking about the trade deadline. And I do think there's a weirdness and a sort of skate your lane choice that this team needs to make in multiple areas. And okay, so we're trading Osborne so that your guy Baker can play, right? Because we're taking sort of a long term approach.
Yeah, KJ Osborne is not here for the long haul, Andy.
Right. But is Baker ready? Doesn't matter. Put him out there. He needs to take him to the top of the mountain, push him, and he'll ski by the time he gets to the bottom, right? Mm-hmm. That's the mentality there.
Or he'll fall down and crack a bone or two, but then he'll remember what not to do the next time he goes up the mountain, should he be brave enough to grab the chairlift. Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Okay, so then we're in total build for the future mode because we're not playing the best 11 players. We're not playing our best receivers. Okay, so Drake May, we're in build for the future mode, so he needs reps, so get him out there. But you don't want to get him out there. And then we're going to keep Jonathan Jones because we need culture, okay? But we could get a third-round pick or a fourth-round pick or whatever, a second-day, third-day pick that could help us in the future. Now, Devon Godshaw, do we keep him because he's really the only guy you have up front that's a D-tackle?
You don't have any other defensive tackles. Equale's already logged more miles.
Okay, I thought we were playing for the future. Because if we're playing for the future and you can unload him to San Francisco for, let's say, a day two pick, maybe they give you, because there's some longevity there. He's 29, I think, about to become 30. Mm-hmm. Maybe they say...
Signed on a friendly-ish deal compared to the way they pay their D-linemen out there.
So we can have a D-tackle for the next few years that'll help us stuff the run, help us, you know, free up Fred Werner and those guys behind him. I think it's difficult in a way for Elliot Wolf, and I know Gerard Mayo's in the conversation, and Matt Groh. What are we doing? Have we reached the point where he's living up to his prediction? Because he said, we're going to be playing younger guys later in the year. I think he told Andrew Callahan before the season started in that little interview they did that mm-hmm. we're going to be playing younger guys. Okay, so are we all in on that? Or so we're not trying to win games? Or are we trying to win games? Or I just don't know exactly what this team is trying to accomplish right now if they trade away. Because they've been a poop show, an absolute poop show the last few weeks.
They've been a crap show for sure. But I feel like...
So you're going to trade Devon Godshaw, who's a supposed defensive leader. You're going to trade Jonathan Jones, who I don't need the word supposed, is a defensive leader, is a team leader.
I think they're listening. I don't think they're definitely I don't think like they're hell-bent on getting to Tuesday. You know, like they're not going to handle it like a bad fantasy draft where it's like, I got to get a quarterback or I have to get a defense in this round. And they'll just end up taking something out of desperation. They're not, put it this way, Andy, they're not going to go to Shaw's and shop hungry, okay?
Like they, ooh, I do that all the time, and
I've told you before, don't do that.
Oh, it's so
rookie
fun.
Move.
Because I come home with like the gimmicky potato chips, the gimmicky Oreos, the gimmicky ice cream, and it's like, wait, I thought you went in to get stuff for a salad. You got some lettuce and cucumbers, and now
your wife sent you for like cauliflower and you know brown rice and
just
milk.
Just eat a side for dinner, and I come home with 17 different desserts.
That does sound fun.
And then I went by the day-old pastries, and I figured, they're day-old. They're half off.
I doubled down on all of those. I mean, have you even grocery shopped if you don't visit the discount rack in the back, bro?
And I never regret it once. What I don't want to regret, because I think that the ideal situation, honestly, if there was an ideal situation, it would be Patriots trade Jonathan Jones for a second-round pick.
Holy everybody, whoa!
No, but and I don't even, it's not so much about the pick, as I think the reaction would also be, oh, yeah, you got to do that. If somebody's willing to give you that for him, no one would talk about...
A third for Judon, you're not getting anything more than that.
But if you don't wow people with the return, I think people are going to say, so you've given up on the season. You're trading your leaders. You're waving the white flag. What kind of message does that say to the locker room? You said before the season you wouldn't tank, Elliot Wolf. This feels like you're tanking and just looking towards 2025 and beyond. It's a tough situation.
But you have... So the way I think that they're going to play it, the smart way to play it would be, hey, we're perfectly content to keep these guys around because of their leadership qualities, because they can teach some of the other guys, the younger guys that we do need to play and learn more about. These guys, the John Joneses and Devon Godshaws, can show them how it's done. That's great. So that's I won't call it a luxury of riches, but that's probably the way that they could and should play it. But if somebody picks up the phone and knocks your socks off, then in a lot of ways, you kind of have to at least take the call. I'm not saying that you have to execute the deal, but you take the call. And for all we know, I'll just put it out there, trying to be effervescent and optimistic about it. For all we know, they could talk to John Jones and say, look, we absolutely want to resign you. Would you be, we can get a pick that we can use next year to help further this team. We would also like you to be here. How do you feel about going to blank for 10 weeks?
Ooh, the old Aroldis Chapman. Is that who that
Yeah, he went to the Cubs and then went right back to the Yankees.
Yeah. I don't hate that idea. Not sure how legal it is. I don't know if that's tiptoe into tampering.
It's a little tamper bay, but at the same time, you know, you're doing business as business is done, Andrew.
Yeah, no, I do. I think it's an interesting situation. I would say this, if you do trade any of those guys, Elliot Wolf, don't make it a straight Jonathan Jones for a seventh round pick.
Oh, God,
My point is, though, send a seventh, get a sixth, like muddy the water a little bit so there's not this direct value assessment. And I don't love the idea also of these 2026 draft picks that they got for Uche because
it's only one, correct?
Yeah. But these other rumors, there's been 2026 picks involved or something. And I wouldn't do that if I were him because I think you might be getting picks for somebody else because if you don't nail the next 12 to whatever months. I'm not sure you'll be around for the 2026 NFL draft. So I would be looking to expedite the rebuild with picks in the 2025 draft that I know I will be making as Elliot Wolf leading the Patriots personnel department. 617-779-7937. 3793-7. We're talking Patriots. We are talking Drake May. Do you want him to play? Hey, I guess we got to ask that same question we've been asking for weeks. Do you really want the Patriots to win on Sunday? Is there value to continuing to win games, getting a lesser draft pick, getting further away from the top of every round in next April's NFL draft? Or are you caught up in a little momentum here? Do you like the youth movement? You like Fitzy? You want to see his guy Javon Baker on the field catching passes from Drake May, celebrating in the end zone? Football be fun again on a Sunday afternoon. We'll dive into that as well. Are the Patriots fun? Are you actually watching the Patriots? Are you entertained by the Patriots?